Hanukkah is just around the corner, where folks from all around the world gather together to wonder, why are Jewish people celebrating a blue and white version of Christmas?
Don't worry, comedian Meg Grunewald has got you covered. She's bringing back her holiday special, Home for Hanukkah with Bubby, an interactive holiday experience where she explains the Festival of Lights.
Today, Meg Grunewald joins us to chat about channeling a Jewish grandmother and why families obsess about their kids during the holidays.
Plus, why we need to draw attention to progressives more than regressives in order to survive the Republican apocalypse.
Barbie tells bigots to suck it with her avocado toast and support for marriage equality.
And a new study reveals dolphins deliberately get high on pufferfish nerve toxins by carefully chewing and passing them around. Hey, don't bogart that pufferfish, Flipper.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
This holiday season, don't leave Feast of Fun out in the cold. Give the gift of 12 years of amazing podcasts. Become a Plus member at feastoffun.com/plus.
Make a donation at feastoffun.com/donate.
Or check out our store, feastoffun.com/store.
Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas.
Joining us today is our lovable Bubba Booby.
Bubby.
I'm just reading this off a sheet of paper. Meg Grunewald, who explains the Festival of Lights, Hanukkah, to everyone in her holiday special, Home for Hanukkah with Bubby, an interactive holiday experience. Now in its second year. Welcome, Meg Grunewald.
Thank you.
Now it's only $10 to see the show.
Yeah, only $10.
Why not go?
Why wouldn't you go? It's only like a little bit of, it's a little bit of change. You can find it in the couch. Dig it up, you know, put the plastic away, put the plastic, and there's probably some change under the plastic.
Now, you're love your Jewish tradition. You also, like me, have an ability to see your own culture and heritage as an outsider and present this to a general audience.
Yeah.
And I imagine that some Jewish people will be like raising an eyebrow going, Meg, what are you doing with the show? It might be rude and offensive. We can't do this in this politicized atmosphere, this anti-Semitic world we were living in.
Yes. And so last year, the impetus, like, you know, after he who should not be named was elected.
Voldemort,
whatever his name is. He got elected. I was like, you know, okay. And like the next day, it's like, hey, let's celebrate with swastikas. So that made me think, like, hey, what can I do that might help with this? And so
to relieve the tension,
and maybe like if we know a little bit more, we can love a little bit more. So I wanted people to know about Hanukkah because most times, like, everybody experiences Christmas, right? It's like in the stores, mm-hmm. everywhere you look, it's commercials, movies, whatever. But Hanukkah, we don't have as much of an opportunity because it's usually celebrated in people's homes. So you have to be invited, blah, blah, blah. So I thought, hey, let's do like a Tony and Tina's wedding type of, like, you know, kind of improv-y, kind of bits sort of thing, where people can actually walk away learning something about Hanukkah. And surprisingly, like, that is a big takeaway from people last year of like, I learned something. I actually know that, you know, it's not just a menorah. It's a Hanukkiah. It's a special type of menorah.
What?
For Hanukkah.
You mean all this time I've been celebrating Hanukkah wrong?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you're just not calling it the right thing.
So it's that menorah is just
it's called
a
Hanukkiah.
Thing.
But okay. There's, you know, you could have a regular menorah on your table, but the Hanukkiah is that the special menorah for Hanukkah.
Oh.
So, you know, and I talk about the different sides of what the dreidel means, and I do a little rap, a Dr. Dreidel rap parody about playing dreidel.
Why not? Everybody knows Jewish people love rapping.
You know? Yeah, I know. 1, 2, 3, into the 4, shin, gimel, hay, and maybe nun is on the floor, ready to win some candy, so back on up, because you know I'm about to spin this top. Okay, you got to come to the rest of the show to see the rest of it.
Tell me more about this top.
So, yeah, this top, I'm sorry,
top?
A different top. So we have, like,
like this holiday.
We play a lot of games, and I wanted people to walk away knowing a little bit of something. And in regards to my fellow Jews, last year we had, you know, several Jewish, visibly, I will say, Jewish people. Like, they had
your Uncle Mari.
Well, you love my Uncle Bernie.
Was it Bernie or Mari?
Bernie.
Bernie.
And he's the one that kissed you on the lips, right?
Afterwards, he's like, I'm so glad you came. And he gave me a big hug.
He probably thought you were somebody else.
He thought I was your boyfriend.
Oh, yeah.
And he kissed me on the lips. And I was like, oh, my God, Meg, what do I do? I don't want to upset him.
And Bernie's a big guy.
Yeah, he's like 6'3".
He was full of love.
I saw it. He comes over, hugs Fausto, and kisses him on the lips. And I'm like, what's happening?
First of all, I would have loved it if he would not, if he had actually hugged the guy I was dating. Because then he would have been like, what is going on?
Well, it's just because I'm so attractive, and he must have assumed you went for the best.
Is that a Hanukkah tradition of the kissing of the strangers?
On the lips, with tongue.
Yes, when they ran out of oil, the kissing is what they used to keep the lights up.
I didn't want to say no to him, you know? I didn't want to be rude.
Well, you know, he's a schmoozer. It's not tradition to kiss random people.
But he was just very caught up in the moment.
Very, very caught up. Anyway, the point is, the visibly Jewish people... I see it and I'm like, and I think I have a responsibility to like try to do us right and stereotype a little bit with the kind of this. But people know that is how people are. And people are like, that is like my aunt. That's like my mother. And lovely enough, the people afterwards were like, this was such a fun show, you know? And so I try to make extra careful that I'm making sure I get everything right when I see somebody.
Well, what I really like about your last year's show, and because I'm a big fan of, you know, the nanny, Fran Drescher. Yeah, yeah. And one of the magic moments of the nanny was when Fran Drescher's Jewish family came into existence in the series and the interaction between the three generations of women. And like, I really like that family comedy experience that you bring into your show.
Thanks. Yeah. And my husband is played by Cynthia Kamak, who is my husband, Morty, otherwise known as Zadie, which is the Yiddish word for grandfather, and Bubby is Yiddish word for grandmother.
Zadie and Bubby.
And so her and I are kind of the hosts for the whole thing, but we designed this show so that any of our friends can pop in and play the show any night. They don't have to be in the whole run. So Cynthia and I are the main people that are in every single week. But it's designed so that people can kind of come in and play their version of a family member.
So one guy might be your grandson. He'll come in then next week. It's somebody else.
Yep. Or he might play the grandpa next week. You know, he might play the grandpa's brother or whatever. You know, there's one character that is a very easy thing is just you sit around and look for an opportunity to make a pun. Mm. And you just go, hey, Morty, did you hear the one about the... And then whatever is inspired. And then you do a pun. And then we move on. And if it's a good joke, we commend it. And if it's a bad joke, we go... Yeah, you're really selling it, Sal. You know, we can make a fun of that grandpa that has the uncle that has a bad joke.
What is the number one concern for Jewish grandparents this holiday season? What really keeps them up at night?
I don't know. I don't have personally any Jewish grandparents
or family
left.
Members.
I think probably
because your mom and your dad are very chill.
Yeah, they're very chill.
They're just gorgeous. Wonderful people. I'm trying to get your mother to adopt me.
Yeah, I know.
Well, Fausto, if she adopted you, you'd have to get circumcised again because she's Jewish and you can't afford to lose anything else down there.
Stop it.
You're a cut above the rest. Trim the brisket, honey.
What keeps Jewish grandparents up at night?
Maybe their children... not amounting to what they want them to be, or their drugs.
Were they like concerned about their like smartphones getting viruses, or it's like the itchy sweater, or is it?
No, I think it's just
the air conditioning to being
maybe
too
their
hot.
Their grandchildren not FaceTiming them enough.
Because that's one thing with my mother. She's not Jewish, but, you know, all old parents are the same.
Old people slowly become Jewish old people, regardless of gender, race,
she is
whatever.
So obsessed with a thermostat.
She comes to my house, right? Yeah.
And she's like, looks at the thermostat and is like, oh, it's so hot in here. Your electric bills must be super high.
Where does she live?
She lives in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, isn't it hot there?
It's hot. That's why she doesn't turn on her thermostat.
Oh, so she's completely.
She's hot in the summer and cold in the winter. Okay. And so I'm just like, listen, Mom, I just don't want to be shivering in my own home. It's only 72 degrees in the winter. I think that's reasonable, you know? Yeah. She wants to keep it 65 in the middle of the day. And I'm just like, that's brutal.
No, that's rough.
Yeah. And I'm just like, what the hell, you know?
You do 65, but you have to wear like long johns. You have to wear a sweater.
Yeah, well, I don't
want
to bundle up in my own house. Yeah, I mean, how am I supposed to live my nudist lifestyle if I'm constantly cold?
You know, the trick's coming over. Turn that heat up to 80.
Go make them sweat.
And then one thing, and I just think about this like a lot of just families in general, they tend to obsess on this one thing that happened 20 years ago. Right? So you like, you had a birthday party and the cake fell on the ground. And everyone's like, the birthday's ruined, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, the mother that you want to adopt you, she will keep bringing up a boy, man, whatever I dated in 06. She will keep bringing that
11
up.
11 years ago.
Yep.
She was like, whatever happened to him?
Oh, she knows what happened. They like to remind me that I made a bad choice dating him.
My mother's still bringing, whatever happened to.
And you're like, why are you bringing this up?
Some girl I dated 25 years ago. Or she'll be like, I ran into what's-her-name's parents. Like you run into what's-her-name's parents every week, you know?
You're their neighbor, you dummy.
And one thing that I really like about your parents, and my parents don't do this too, is that they compare you to what they think are more successful children elsewhere.
You know? Mine?
Yeah, your parents don't do this.
No, my parents don't do that. Yeah. First of all, I'm an only child, so.
You're
loophole.
Magic. Yeah.
And second of all, I do pretty well, so they don't have much to complain about.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, you've observed this behavior in other people's families or the grandparents. The grandparents are kind of in a strange place because they're like parents who have retired. And so they can just enjoy the grandchildren for the magic of childhood, right?
Yeah, for the most part.
But sometimes the parents, like, and I've seen this is like the worst parenting mistake that I see. It's like, you know, it's like Susie over there. She stuck with, you know, the ballet that you dropped in high school, and now she's touring the world, you know, and you're like, thanks, Mom, for reminding me I'm a failure, you know.
But see, that then it falls on you, and if you see yourself as a failure because of some comment your mother makes, then I think we have deeper issues.
Yeah, but what our parents say to us carries a lot of weight.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why, like, at this point, when my mom will bring up that guy, I'm like, why are you bringing this up? I'm super confused.
And this reminds me of an episode we had. This is a really good one where we had this friend of ours who was, he was a male stripper, like a go-go dancer.
Uh-huh.
And he had a nervous breakdown. His life was in shambles, you know, but he's a blonde, muscular, attractive man. Right?
Yeah.
And he was on our podcast, and our other friend, who I guess he knew him back, I guess they went to like high school together or something. His parents would always be like, thought that he was this other guy. And they were a lot like, why can't you just be like Brian? Brian is so successful, so handsome and all that stuff. And I'm like, Brian, life is a wreck.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
you know, it's like, and his parents were just like wishing that his son was like Brian, you know,
and not knowing.
But they
that
were confused. Thing. It was a different Brian.
It was a different
we had
Brian.
Two Brians on the show. One's, you know, handsome, attractive, has got his life together.
Gotcha.
And his parents were always just like, and like in college, why can't you be like him? He's more masculine and da 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 da.
He's like,
and
so what? Then we had another, I missed that episode.
Another Brian who's, you know, his life kind of in many ways fell apart. Mm. And he really, really struggled. And this person was listening to it and confused the two Brians. He's just like, oh my God, I feel like so vindicated. I'm like, I'm sorry, that's the wrong Brian. The other one still is attractive, successful,
and rich.
And he's like, God damn it, now I feel terrible again.
But I think that's a part of it is like, you know, it's really, our parents really obsess about us and care about us deeply. And so, you know, when you've gone through struggles in the past, you tend to overcompensate by obsessing about your children.
Yeah.
And I noticed that, like, you know, sometimes, and I tell this to a lot of parents that I work with, it's like, love is about trusting that your kids are going to make the right decision, and that your kids trust you enough that when they make the wrong decision, they turn to you for help.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
And your mother is always there for you.
Yeah, she's always there for me.
She's there for me.
Yeah, she's there for everybody. I mean, everybody, you know, I mean, I think I, as the years go on, I notice that I, like, have more and more things.
Appreciation for them.
No, more and more, like, similarities to my mom's like personality or tendencies.
Well, your mom's
or
like
something
an,
like that.
She's like a ruthless Etsy tycoon. You know,
yeah, she's like she's she ruthless. Like, they have really great customer service.
Well, she'll see like something cute, you know, at a garage sale or an arts and craft place, and she's like, I could sell this for like twice as much as they're charging for it. And I'm like, girl, help me, please. I'm like, I don't know how to do.
You just gotta get an eye for it.
She's just brilliant, you know?
Yeah, she's...
And how does your relationship with your parents manifest? It's because it does come out in your show.
I don't know. Does it?
What's your mom and dad saying about it? I'm curious to know.
They like it. They came and saw it. My mom brought her... You know, Yiddish speaking and Jewish family, that this is probably very, they're like, I recognize so many people. I'm like, it's just coming from a, you know,
it's a place of love.
It's a melting pot of characters in that one.
Are you changing anything this year that's going to be different?
Yeah. So we've done kind of like a revamp and we've been changed out a lot of the games that we did last year just to add variety. We have like a guessing game kind of thing where they're, whoever is playing the son or the daughter, their life implodes. We find out about it before they come to the party, and then they have to guess what went wrong in their life. So through us being like, oh, you're here. Interesting. Oh, well, honey, we know you lost your job, you know, and we're giving them clues. So if they're a carpenter, it's like, you know, you were really nailing the head.
So the person that's playing the son doesn't
has
know
no idea
how
what,
their life implodes.
Yes.
So then they have to improv off that.
And that's how they enter the show.
Ah,
that's really good.
Yeah. So that's a different thing. And then some of the components we kept from last year because they just, you know, they worked. And we're just having a little bit more music.
And this year the show is sponsored by the Jewish Anti-Defamation League, right?
I did not see that check yet.
But I mean, you actually could like apply for some grants for
this. Yeah, we could.
It actually does have a public service.
No, it totally does. And I mean, I've been reaching out to synagogues to try to get like, you know, their sisterhood groups and like men's clubs and whatever to come. It is a show that is, I would say, PG-13. Uh-huh. It's definitely not R-rated because, you know, Bobby's ears are, you know,
sensitive.
but you know, it's an hour long show. It's just a really fun time.
Did this all sort of evolve from your very successful Vine account? Rest in peace, Vine.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Because you know, Vine, and for people who might not be familiar, for a while you were like a Vine superstar.
Yeah.
And you had millions and millions of views of your 6 second
six
videos.
6 second, yeah.
Where you just kind of, you know, effortlessly went from character to character. And one of the characters was Bubby.
Well, a similar character of Bubby. You know, this is a character that's lived in my life and my mind for many, 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 many years. So just to come, you know, figure it out. And what's a way that, what's the different type of holiday show? You know, you go and you see like the holiday pageant, or like we went and saw, you know, the Scrooge McDuck, or whatever it's called. And it's not Scrooge McDuck.
A Christmas Carol.
Scrooge McFuck. Sexy Scrooge McDuck. But no, I mean, all these,
ducks,
you know,
have a corkscrew shaped penis, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
I think they do, right?
They open bottles of wine with
Or they have corkscrew vaginas or something like that. Anyway. Like
that. Their vaginas are shaped like bottles of wine. So
or do we digress? You know, make a duck for Christmas. Okay. So so it's more like, you know, where do we go? I don't even know where we're going.
Oh, so
that.
You wanted, so you see, we're inundated with Christmas at this time of year.
Yeah, so there's too many Christmas shows, and there's really never a Hanukkah show. Mm-hmm. And sort of like, because I think people are like, what do I do with Hanukkah? Mm-hmm. I don't know how to touch it. And so for me, I thought, what if we just invite people to a Hanukkah party?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And people can, you know, there's going to be, there. It looks like it, we have a sofa set up, there's like decorative cushions, and we have the presents set up, and it really looks like you're walking into someone's home of a Hanukkah party, and it's very relaxed. A lot of the cast is sitting in the audience when people come in. They're interacting with them. It's meant to feel like you are in someone's home.
You know, a lot of people sort of have a very love-hate relationship with the commercialization of their own culture and their holidays. And And I was thinking about this, you know, with the movie Coco coming out in theaters, which if you haven't seen it, you must go see it. It's fantastic.
I hear it's good.
But, you know, just show up about 20 minutes late so you can skip the Frozen 21-minute movie. And part of it is like, you know, we want to keep our cultures intact because they're, you know, there's tradition. There's something comforting about the familiarity of that tradition. And so when we see these like businesses turning, you know, our intimate experiences into something that is this pageant for money and wealth, it can be really startling and very terrifying. And at the same time, it's, you know, if you want your culture to survive and be adopted by other people, or at least, you know, be remembered into the future, it's kind of inevitable to have to commercialize it.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you know, on the same thing, it's like you want to see your own people doing shows. You have, you know, sometimes you got to create the content yourself. And so I've kind of marketed this and taken this little baby under my wing with Cynthia. And we sort of have say of how it's done, but we also invite people to come and be in, you know, like I've had people, and I, you know, this year I was very very conscious of saying like, here's the roles we're looking at. All of these roles can be played by any and all genders, any and all colors, shapes, sizes. They are just characters. They are a character when you make them a character. So
bend them to your will.
Yeah. So if I have, you know, son, daughter, it's like in, you don't identify with those, but you want to be someone's child. Great. I will take you. And we can change the pronouns and verbiage forever to make everyone comfortable. But I wanted, you know, I think just being aware of like, there are people in the comedy community that, you know, do use various different they, them, and identify with all those different. And I wanted to make sure that everyone knew that, like, just because it says son or daughter does not mean that you have to be a quote unquote son or daughter.
I'm your genderqueer young person.
Mm-hmm. Get my
well, I like that you have an alternative to all this Christmas stuff, because, you know, we just did a show yesterday with Peaches, and it was like about like kids who kill, like movies where they have murderous children. And the inspiration was is because like Christmas is coming up. You have all these kids running around. And I always like to watch Rosemary's Baby around Christmas, because it just kind of like it takes the edge off of the whole holiday. And so it's like you need always something different. And maybe I encourage somebody out there to maybe have a satanic Christmas special next year.
Yeah. Christmas is for Satan.
I mean, if you like, I mean, Home Alone, the things that kid did should have killed those guys.
You edit The Good Son.
But he's like being protected.
You can edit. Oh, yeah. What is it? Which good, movie good does son. Home Alone have Donald Trump in it?
The Home Alone. Oh, that's Home Alone 2. Lost in New York.
You can edit Home Alone 2 and
The Good Son.
And The Good Son. So make it into a hero film where Macaulay Culkin kills Donald Trump.
Where he drops Donald Trump off. He lets his fingers slip.
And he dies.
And Elijah Wood's
forever.
The evil.
Yeah, you just that needs to somebody needs to edit that stuff.
I got Jesse just getting a little nip
Jesse
on the.
Jesse just come over and say hi.
A sip on the
did
nip.
He bite your bit. He
no,
bite
he
your
just
bitty.
Snuzzled.
A little snuzzle on the titty.
Yeah,
this
sip
dog
on the nip.
Your new sex toy.
Yeah. You're excited about a sex toy that you ordered on Amazon
and you
Prime.
Haven't even gotten it yet.
And I haven't even. I got.
Reviews,
no, I did it on eBay.
Oh, did you bid on
good
it?
Good reviews.
Or did you just buy it
I just
at
the right
price. The womanizer.
The womanizer.
Ooh,
I know.
It sounds kind of sexist. Does it look like Harvey Weinstein?
Gets me what? So horny to have feet harassed
it's
when I want to.
Like a, it's shaped like a lipstick. Like it looks like a very expensive Chanel lipstick.
So it's a little fella.
No, it's actually quite big. It looks like the size of a grande Starbucks cup.
Okay.
And is it just as offensive to Christians as...
I'm sure it is.
Look at this.
First of all,
it's
called the womanizer.
We're drinking actually one of these Starbucks cups, and it has a heart on it, like, you know, the
like
internet heart that looks like a vagina.
Or two butts.
And that's
butts.
It. And the Christians are like, Starbucks.
Well, it was
is
that
evil.
Video where two women were holding the same cup of coffee and looking at each other. Like they could have been sisters.
Well, it also says, take a sip, you hateful motherfuckers.
God bless
Resist
Satan.
Resist Trump. God bless Satan. But I'm sorry about your womanizer.
You're about
anyway.
To enjoy. Extremely hot, just like the flames of hell you're going to be in.
So your lipstick basically eats you out.
Yeah, I guess so, it's got a suction in the center.
That's great.
And it's supposed to like I don't know, just...
It engorges your clitoris with blood.
Yeah. Oh, yes, wow. Please. Dr. Mark, please.
Well, a clitoris is made out of erectile tissue, just like a penis.
So it's like sucking on it.
Scale, usually.
With a vibration, I guess.
Quit mansplaining women's sexuality.
Well, I'm not explaining the audience out there, because a lot of people, they don't know what a clitoris is.
That's
or
true.
What you even do with it, or what it's like.
So you put the lipstick,
where to find it.
You put the straight edge of the lipstick like you would put on your lips. On your
is
clip.
It like a matte or is it a gloss?
It's a matte.
Okay.
What color is it?
Red.
It is. So if someone sees it, they'll just think you have a big.
They'll just feel like you're trying to
comical.
You're putting lipstick on your lips.
Can clowns use this as a cartoonish kind of lipstick?
Oh,
prop.
For sure. And some kids definitely gonna be like, there's lipstick for a giant, and then it's gonna be weird. But
for a long time, people were putting lipstick on their lips, and they didn't realize that they were actually putting on dead insects onto their lips, because that color red cochineal is actually comes from dead bugs. Hmm. Dead.
Well,
red
they crushed
bugs.
Them.
Yes, they crushed them. Of course, it's not like you have live.
Do
little
you
bugs
know
on
how much dang stuff that you don't know where it comes from? You're rubbing all over your body, ingesting. You're like, oh, perfect.
So you have yet to try this out, but my girlfriends say it's
real good. As talking to my friend who bought it, she's like, yeah, you like pretty much just turn it on and you're done.
Because, a lot of women, they can just, they can come in 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah, you don't need to think. It's not like, I got to get the right thought. It's like, you got
I
the
have
right
to read 50 Shades of Grey. Yeah. I'm not going to come till chapter 7.
Yeah, I got
to
pull my own hair. No, I don't know.
Whereas guys, I always thought, guys, it takes them longer. But I guess most guys can come from jerking off within 2 minutes.
Yeah, I mean,
and so that's why it's like you see, and I just was reading an article about these, they call them pensioners over in the UK. These two pensioners got arrested because they were like jerking each other off in a bathroom at a department store. And so they've been thrown out. I'm sorry, these guys are
pensioners, mean like
retirees,
retired couple, senior citizens.
Yes. But I guess they didn't really necessarily know each other, and one of them identifies as straight. You've got your dick out, and you're like, well, we can get this done in 2 minutes.
So two grandpas were getting down to the bathroom?
Getting down to the bathroom. Yeah, it happens all the time.
Silver foxes.
So you're saying it doesn't take that long.
No,
see, the thing is
with ladies,
if you got a good machine, all you got to do is just be in the mindset of like, yeah, I could come. I got 2 minutes.
The fingers, the vibrator really does a much better job than the finger.
For me, much quicker.
Which is weird because
cannot do like jackhammer.
We did a thing with the AIDS Foundation of Chicago. We did these live forums, and they did a survey for men's health. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And one of the things was like how many guys own like a sex toy. And surprisingly, it was only about 16% of the audience of gay men owned some kind of sex toy, because they're like, what's going to be better than your hand?
True.
I guess a mouth or a hand.
The penis and the hand co-evolved together to work together. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Like penis and the hand?
The shape of a penis and the shape of a hand is like a banana,
Yeah.
The banana succeeded evolutionary-wise because it fit in our hands.
Well, I did just watch that movie Girls Trip, and she talks about grapefruiting, where you cut... put your dick through the center of a grapefruit and jerk it off.
That does not seem pleasurable at all.
The guy gets citrus in the tip of it, and he's screaming for it. But
she's a Chicago comedian, that woman, isn't she not?
She's a sex therapist and a viral blogger, Angel. I forget her last name, but she does the grapefruit technique. You guys can Google it. And it's really, sort of matter of fact until she actually starts sucking on the dildo.
I mean, it would make the flavor of a dick much more... flavorable.
Oh,
you're like,
dicks
ooh,
taste delicious. What are you talking about?
I mean, just have some sticky grapefruit juice all over them. Mm.
Yes, baby.
Get me some vodka. We'll have a greyhound.
Oh, I've had a greyhound in forever.
Mm. I love vodka soda water.
Or get a tequila and have a paloma.
Oh, wow. You know your drinks.
I bartended for a little bit.
So, bad, pretty some horrible things have happened in the past year. It's sort of like stunning and shocking to reflect on this past year of how, tremendous setbacks we faced as a society. And we're just we possibly are days away from passing Trump's tax plan, which basically will destroy our healthcare system and give, already extremely wealthy people even more money they don't need and decimate, you know, our economy.
Well, thank God I'm in that bracket. Phew.
Where none of us are, you know?
I'm kidding.
And then
life's horrible.
The other thing, too, is right now they're also the FCC, who Trump appointed, the head of the FCC, even though he was brought in by Obama. Trump made Ajit Pai the head of the FCC. They're about to pass some repealed net neutrality rules. And so we're already starting to see some of our listeners are like, I can't get the podcast on my iPhone. I can only watch it on the website. Or people are like starting that Comcast is already like creating slow and fast lanes and already like fucking with the whole system. This may be the last year we do this podcast if they shut us down. I want just people right now to go to battleforthenet.com and sign up. And at the very least, send a text message, an email. And there's information about a protest you can go to save the internet, because you're going to have to start paying for porn, basically. That's I want to just put it down in a nutshell. This is Meredith Ketchel's point, and I just thought it was so smart. You're going to have to start paying for porn. That's how you start a revolution. Get people on the streets.
You're like, they're taking away our freedoms.
You know, and porn revolutionized the internet. The way we play videos today and stuff is because we were able to, because people wanted to consume that kind of porn. You wouldn't have YouTube if it wasn't for the porn companies.
And so, Meg, how, you know, as a comedian, you work with the world that you live in. And I imagine a lot of the people that you're working with on Home for Hanukkah want to bring up a lot of these depressing, sad events of this past year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they naturally come out, but, you know, my show definitely doesn't have any platters for that to sit on for the show.
What do you mean by that?
Meaning there is nothing in the show that is directly making any statement on that. Mm. So if it happens to come up through a suggestion from somebody, that's the only way it's going to make it in the show.
Foster, you're going to have to go see the show and make it a suggestion.
Yeah. Holocaust.
Yeah, you're going to Holocaust yourself a good time, because people will kick your ass out.
Oh, so you can't do it anonymously?
Small, intimate party, so...
Who said that?
Unless you know how to ventriloquist.
Throw some stuff out. Let's see if we can get tossed out of your audience.
All right. Melania Trump.
I take Melania Trump over Donald Trump any day, though.
That's what all comedians want to do, shows about Melania Trump.
Because she's literally frozen. Her face is frozen.
It's painful and awkward.
You can't say Melania without saying me.
I want to do a shout out to
Melania.
I want to do a shout out to Barbie, who's finally come out for marriage equality after all these
years. She's come out for marriage equality, or is she coming out as?
Oh, I don't think she. Maybe.
Well, she has a.
She's already been
friend.
A pilot. She's already been. Come on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she can be anything now.
And if you notice the I guess there's some Instagram posts.
There's an
of
Instagram.
Her.
Well, there's Barbie style. That's Barbie's thing, and you know she's located in, of course, of all places, Malibu, California, because she's got her dream house there.
Oh yeah.
And she's wearing a T-shirt that says "Love Wins," and so the post says, "Proud to wear this Love Wins shirt." With Song of Style. So she's got this going on. And then what's kind of interesting, though, is like they have her at a restaurant in Silver Lake, California, and she's being served, and she looks like she's having avocado toast.
Take that, haters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why is avocado toast relevant?
Well,
here?
Avocado toast became kind of like this meme where people, like this one, I guess he was a senator or a congressperson, was just like, well, if all these, you know, young hipsters or millennials, if they would stop spending all their money on avocado toast, they might be able to afford health insurance.
I think also Barbie is intentionally trying to say that her friend Amy Song, which is the Asian Barbie. Mm-hmm. They're trying to also insinuate that they're maybe dating each other.
Oh, you think?
I'm reading the comments on Instagram right now.
Because they're showing
most
a lot of photos
of them. Pretty popular.
Well, that's the thing is, like, Barbie's loved by little girls and gay men. You know, it's like we had a guy named John on the podcast a couple years ago. I still run into him at the gym, and he has like over 1,000 Barbie dolls. And he's like, basically, when he starts dating a guy, and I think he's been with the same guy now for a while, that he's just like, he's okay with it. But he's just like, yeah, I would meet guys and like they would find out how many Barbies I own, and they're like, I'm done.
I mean, you know, you gotta some of those things you, not everybody's into.
Yeah.
Well, and I feel that this is, you know, a way to get out of this situation we're in. And I, you know, I think a lot of artists and journalists and bloggers feel very comfortable in sort of putting a lot of attention to Nazis, to Trump, to the right wing, to the Republican Party. And maybe we need to put a lot more energy into progressive people who are succeeding in politics and culture instead of these white nationalists who aren't. You know, it's like, I think sometimes talking about the assets and talking about people who are doing really amazing work, and even just a company like Mattel putting out this Barbie is a move in the right direction.
Yeah. And I would say, and I, as after my quick scrolling of the comments on this, I would say most of it is very positive. Mm-hmm. The only, you know, horrible person is a nothing account with Trump train something on it.
Oh,
so,
Jesus.
You know, it's
and
like
those Trump things. It's like the thing is that we're figuring out is that a lot of these Trump supporters that you see online and these so-called Bernie bros who really bash Hillary with no regard are really just robots and Russian bots that are set up to divide us and to cause this controversy and make it seem as though there's some kind of weird groundswell of support for these things when they're it's just not there.
But I've even started observing this, and maybe because Mark and I, you know, we do spend a lot of time and energy covering drag, cross-dressing and art, mm-hmm. you know, gender nonconforming in culture. And we started to see like a lot of this weird astroturfing manifest itself in that community. And I'm just like, why the hell would Russian hackers or robots want have anything to do with RuPaul's Drag Race? Mm. And part of it is, I don't think it is that they're intentionally targeting it, is that we live in a cloud of this kind of divisive culture to begin with, mm-hmm. and that manifests itself there in the audience of that TV show. Mm-hmm. And so we're starting to see people just kind of going, you know, making really like divisive, attacking judgments on the contestants, on the fans, on other drag queens mm-hmm. elsewhere. And to me, it's just like, it's really sad because we got into drag, we got into all this stuff because it was an inclusive, safe space. It was an inviting mm-hmm. environment. And, you know, as drag goes mainstream, we're starting to see a lot of this toxic mm-hmm. culture leaking into our own community.
Well, it's also micro-targeting. And so, you know, they have an ability with these computer programs now to see that, okay, so let's say you like this popular TV show and you also like this, but that also informs that you are a Hillary supporter or maybe you're a Bernie supporter. And so they can analyze these things much, you know, because it's on a computer and be like, okay, these are the communities that need to be targeted. These are the things and we need to disrupt them so that they don't organize and, you know, start a revolution.
And so the consequence of that is that you're having, I think, a lot of young people who would normally be much more progressive mm-hmm. actually being, you know, coerced or persuaded into acting against their own interests because they're being presented very disruptive, very divisive points of view on their social media. So we have to question our own content and our own actions and our own message that we send out there. Are we being divisive? Are we attacking people on a superficial level? Are we being disruptive to some degree ourselves? Because we are part of the system too, and we are also part of this propaganda machine, whether we are conscious of it or not. And that is something heavy to contemplate over the holiday season. And that's why I think, you know, I think your approach might be actually a really constructive approach, Meg, in your show, because I think that idea of just saying, you know, and we've done this kind of with the podcast too. We really don't talk too much about Trump or this sort of negative atmosphere to some degree, because ultimately it really doesn't get us anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, like I appreciate I know there's a Christmas by Milan, you know, there's other sort of Trump shows around mm-hmm. And I'm glad that people are able to do those. I personally don't have the right voice or attitude to put effort into those shows. Mm-hmm. So I put into something that I think brings people away from that. And, you know, and just giving people a different experience. You know, we have there's a part where these like neighborhood church ladies come in and they're just like, you guys having a party. And we invite them in and they learn about mm-hmm. the holiday and they sort of like, you know, come around being like, well, we are that different after all, you know.
And that's why we gotta say Hanukkah, not Hanukkah.
Which is the first year I've ever heard of that, and it doesn't really make sense. But okay.
Well, Mark said it's like, Hanukkah, wait to see your show. And I was like, well, Hanukkah is already the positive form of Hanukkah. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have to say Hanukkah.
She can.
Hanukkah, honey, not Hanukkah.
So those people were obviously not Mormons, because the Mormons already know that you're Jewish and won't stop by.
Yeah, these aren't Mormons.
They don't even try.
Know who lives where and what religion they are already, because they write it all down in little books.
Not only that, if they know that you're accepting of transgender people, they're not going to bother with you either.
Okay.
There's a new study that says than any religious group, 71% of atheists or agnostics say gender can be different than sex at birth, while only 15% of white evangelicals think the same. Mm. So basically, if you are big shocking surprise, if you're right wing Trump supporter, you probably don't think too kindly on gender nonconforming people. Mm.
Yeah.
That seems about right.
Well, they're not going to like me dressed as an old lady and my friend dressed as an old Jewish man.
They're like, you're tearing society apart, Meg. Mm-hmm.
Well, Angela Lansbury has lost a lot of fans today.
Why?
Because she's saying that women must accept some of the blame for sexual harassment and abuse that they get because the way they make themselves attractive to men.
So Angela Lansbury, every time she puts some lipstick on,
she says she's never really experienced it in her career, but also too,
she's also forever 90 years old.
You know, well, she's 90 some years old now.
Yeah, she has been for the last 4 years.
I mean, she made her film debut like back in movie Gaslight with Ingrid Bergman and Charles Boyer or what. And those guys have been dead for a long, long time. Of course, they were probably much older than she was, but still.
I mean, does she get a slide because she's like an older woman?
She's not getting a slide from some people. So this is what she said. There are two sides to this coin.
Sure.
We have to own up to the fact that women, since time immemorial, have gone out of their way to make themselves attractive. And unfortunately, it has backfired on us, and this is where we are today. Mm. We must sometimes take blame, women. I really do think that, although it's awful to say, we can't make ourselves look as attractive as possible without being knocked down and raped. You know, and you know, in some ways she does have a point, because like she's saying, I mean, I'm just saying is like, okay, you're attractive and so some guy's going to come after you. But on the other side of that too is like, unattractive women also get sexually harassed.
And you should be able to be dressed and look however you naturally look, or get yourself done up and be able to walk out and not get raped.
Ladies, ladies, if you all just dress and look like Angela Lansbury, nothing will go wrong.
Mm-hmm. No, there's people with old people fetish.
The thing about it is, Angela Lansbury,
raped all the time.
Yeah, well, I've met Angela Lansbury in person. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I was noticed is that, one, she's a very confident and no-nonsense person, and she's 7 feet tall. Mm-hmm. She's enormous.
Really?
Yeah, she's like a basketball player. She's super tall.
And like, then they hide that in film, I would imagine,
right? Yes, they put all the other actors
How'd she fit into that Cabot Cove?
It was a mystery that she solved.
But, you know, I think whenever we hear this kind of victim-blaming rhetoric in any circumstance, we sort of have to sometimes forgive the person for saying that, because it's a very instinctual response.
5'8".
No, I've met Angela Lansbury. Okay, that is not true.
She's 5'8". Are you sure you didn't meet B. Arthur?
No. Angela, I have photographs of Angela Lansbury. She is a tall woman.
Maybe you're the little one.
I'm 5'10". She was taller than I was.
I need this picture later. But anyway, continue.
Yeah, I have photographs of Angela Lansbury at a party at Terrence McNally's 70th birthday party, and she is a tall
Amazon. So you were wearing your heels.
Yeah. she was wearing heels, you know, but so
anyway,
it's very instinctual to blame the victim. because we have the self-preservation as human beings. And when we see something horrible happen to somebody, we instinctually go, well, that could never happen to me because I don't dress that way. I don't go to those places. I'm a tall woman who's known into no nonsense. But violence does not discriminate. You know, violence can happen to anybody.
Yeah. I mean, you know, me, I think I present myself as like a don't fuck with me kind of person. And I think that that's, you know, benefited me in some ways, but that doesn't mean I don't get catcalled at every single freaking week on my block. Like, you know, I'm walking out with like sweatpants on and like a sweatshirt and it's like,
and I think there's one,
and you're like,
How the sex workers that work on the corner in my hometown of Erie, that's how they dress. They wear sweatpants and sweatshirts.
And
easy on, easy off.
What are you wearing right now?
Sweatshirts.
Sweatpants. I got Erie. Some business to do later.
But I think part of it is that it's just this idea that, you know, when you're undergoing that situation where you're being harassed and then it has a ability to escalate into violence, it's unfolding so quickly that you're not conscious of it happening.
Yeah.
And there's really a lot, you know, everybody goes like, well, I would just, you know, bit his dick off. Or I would have kicked him in the balls. I would have done this. And it goes so fast that you're just not aware of what to do.
Yeah. And I mean, if you're in a naked situation, you're in a compromised, you know, who knows what flips on in there. And the thing is also, you know, this Me Too thing is that seeing people's accounts of things hopefully opened up people's eyes that like, sexual harassment is a very, very wide spectrum. That goes from anywhere about, you know, having an old man squeeze you a little too hard that you're like, oh, okay, all right, you know, to actual, you know, people being raped. You know, there's even the moment when you just walk out of your house and you have somebody be like, hey, mommy. And you're like,
well, they interviewed a lot of those guys who catcall women, and they all share one thing in common.
What?
They think that the women like it. And so they never occurred to them that maybe the women they're harassing don't like being catcalled. They're like, I'm giving her a compliment. Who doesn't like compliments? I want to be catcalled. And it's part of it is like, it's just a lack of empathy. You know, and so a lot of that stems from, you know, the fact that a lot of kids grow up without any parents in their household. There's nobody in their homes. They don't have homes to come home to. A lot of kids, you know, we don't have the examples. We need to have an infrastructure as a society where parents can afford to spend time with their kids. So way builds empathy in people. And I think if we want to be a society that fights violence and increases empathy, we need to inspire that in our young people and allow those experiences to develop.
Well, with
naturally.
This Angela Lansbury thing, you know, it's like she's 92 years old. It's like, why are we, you know, why do we still have to have the discussion of like, what somebody's wearing, what some energy someone's putting out there. Can we not just be like, don't rape people, don't harass people in any way that they're not asking for. Like you're not, they're not saying,
right.
Hi, hello, my name is Meg. I would really love it if you would harass me right now.
And that's
consent, you know?
Well, that's the thing. And then Foster just brought this up the other day on the podcast too, is like when bad things happen to people, it's they always look for like, this couldn't happen to me. So let me figure out why it couldn't happen to me. And so it often ends up sounding like it's victim blaming. So she's saying didn't happen to me because I didn't put myself out there to be a sex pot. And so that's why it happens to them. So it wouldn't happen to me, because we all want to make ourselves feel
safe.
But
it can happen to anybody.
Yeah, it can happen to anybody. But that's the thing. It's like you need to delude yourself in some sense and say, like, I'm safe in this situation.
Well, you can take precautions just like when you're cooking, you know? You take precautions. You're not going to put your hand in the flame. You're going to get an oven mitt. You're not going to touch the steam.
Or, like, I always think about, like, when that shark attacks me, what am I going to do to get away from that shark? And, you know, you punch it in the head. You gouge its eyeballs out. You know, you do something.
So you think about that and you have yourself prepared. But it is, to me, I'm not walking around. You know, I'm not walking around looking for a fight.
So what do you do when somebody catcalls you and so you just ignore it?
Every now and then, I ignore it. Every now and then, if they're like really aggressive, I'm like, okay, like, that's pretty much, you know, like, all right. You know, if somebody passes by me and it's a closer interaction and somebody's just like, oh, hello, beautiful. I'm like, hello, you know, like, thank you. You know, if somebody gives me a compliment, I have found that if I just say thank you and I keep moving, that's it. But if you ignore it, then they're like, man, you rude bitch. Or like, you need to stop being like that. It's just like, it's better for me to just be like, thanks, and then walk away. You know, because it's like, thanks, you're not doing anything to get further along because you're a big giant baby, so bye. You know, it's like, what is the purpose? Mm-hmm. I'm more like, what's the purpose of this? Is the purpose for you to get my attention? Mm-hmm. Because like, do you think that shouting at your car is going to make me want to date you and get in bed with you? Mm-hmm. Like, first of all, you're driving right by. I don't even know who you are.
Yeah. So, well, and you know, I think about like how gay men treat each other in public spaces, and you know, we either sort of like, you know, and unfortunately I see this happening too often, is that we reduce everybody, whether do I want to fuck them or not. Mm-hmm. And if I don't want to have sex with them, I give them the cold shoulder. And conversely, if I do want to have sex with them, I am relentless in giving them unwanted attention until they're just kind of like, you know, ask me to leave.
Yeah.
And it's like, part of it is like, we really need to think deeply about how we form healthy relationships with our peers, that we can, you know, invite everybody to the table, everybody to the party. And I mean this like, you know, look at your social media, look at your social gatherings. As Joan Crawford says, and I posted this on the internet, the best parties have people from all age groups. And I like to throw a little bit of vodka into everything. Even the fruit salad has vodka in it.
She wants everybody to come from studio executives to actors and to entertainers, but she doesn't want dirty hippies with dirty feet coming in.
But she feels that a lot of the youth of today have a lot of intelligent, wonderful things to say, and they're marvelous people.
Mm-hmm. And they're a hell of a lay.
But you know, I mean, as far as like, you know, speaking of like harassment or whatever, like, you know, there's no reason why I should have to tell a guy that I've been on a date with or who have dated in the past. There's no reason why I should have to tell them numerous times, stop contacting me.
Oh, and that happens?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I have said, I am not interested in dating you. I'm not, good luck, best of luck with your life. And they still find ways to pop up. And so to me.
So you block their phone number, you block them on social media.
Yeah, block it all. And they find new ways to pop up, but.
Because they think, might have a chance? Or is
I
it,
don't
do
know.
Just,
I don't know.
I don't
know. But people,
me,
you know, it's just like, the thing is.
Do you want me to call any of these guys? I'm serious.
Or people coming 6 months later that just, you know, it's like, it didn't work out. They, you know, somebody ghosted me. And then I'm like, I'm sorry. Who are you? Like, what? Like,
Jesse, quit drinking out of the toilet. Jesse.
Anyway, the point is that, you know, even when you are very explicit with people, there's something we're doing.
It's a sense
somewhere
of entitlement.
A sense of entitlement. Somewhere along the way, somebody did not tell these guys when somebody says no to you that you walk away and you don't take it personally.
Okay. Should I be blocking? And I'm so comfortable and happy to block people on YouTube for, you know, aggressive, violent, negative,
homophobic,
bigoted comments. But on social media, part of it is like on a site like Facebook, it's coming, you know, when I get that negativity, that violence from people that I know already or have met in real life, it's much more difficult to ban or block them. And I'm just like, and part of me is just like, you know, I don't know how to handle that sometimes. And I'm just like, I'm struggling to wrap my head around how somebody who I thought I had a healthy relationship all this time had been cultivating a seething resentment of me and is now manifesting itself. And I just don't know what to do with that.
I don't know. For me, I think being on Vine and having all that kind of experience and just, as somebody who enjoys, you know, Buddhist thinking and things like that, it's just like this, like all that stuff has nothing to do with me. Mm-hmm. Like I am just
it's a wave in the ocean.
Yeah. I am like, I am just something that is, you know, part of their day and they've found it necessary to loop me into that. But I don't take it, you know, I really have a hard time taking very much personally. Like if people don't like the, you know, if people review the Bubby Show and they don't like it, it's like, okay, You know, like I'm not.
I have other terrible shows I'll put on.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Don't you worry. But no, it's. I mean, I care about people's opinions, but also if, like, you know, I know that, you know, there's so many reasons why people don't like things, and people want to just be like
That's why Mark likes to say, you know, we rely on your financial support to make the show, and it, because you guys like us, and if you don't like us. Give us some money so we can improve it.
Yeah, tell us how we can improve. You know, that's the thing. It's like we're always looking for solutions here. And we and I've taken this to heart. There was a scientific study saying listening to people complain without offering solutions makes you dumber. And so if you're one of those people that's always on Facebook, all you're doing is complaining about things constantly and you don't offer real solutions, you're bringing your community, you're bringing your followers down. And so anytime I bring up a problem, I always try and be like, hey, let's find a solution, because finding the solution, that's where the intelligence is.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's healthy to go to a protest and feel like you're making a difference. You're showing these malevolent forces that you're not going to just stay home and, you know, try to upvote or downvote something or click like or call someone out on your social media page. You're actually leaving the house and doing something about it. And I think, you know, it's much harder to really hate on somebody when you're facing them face to face, you know, and when you're listening to them.
When you see them as a real human being and not just like some entity that overshadows your every move.
And maybe we just need to chill out and, you know, relax. There's a study on dolphins.
Aww.
Just like us, they get high.
On what?
On pufferfish nerve toxins.
Oh, yeah, pufferfish.
They carefully chew and pass them around to get intoxicated. So just dolphins know this, and stoners will know that, you know, you pass the puff to your friend and share the goods.
That's when they're like, that's their coughing.
How am I talking to myself? You guys both have your faces when they're, buried when they're in social
coughing,
media.
I'm listening to you. When they're coughing instead of like, that's when they're going.
You know, I think it's really cute to think about dolphins, you know, chewing on those blowfish and then passing them over and getting high. But dolphins can be mean. They're like vicious. Documentaries. There's like serial killer dolphins. They're rapist dolphins.
Yeah.
It's horrifying. Dolphins are just like us, capable of being lovable and cute or doing great damage.
So there's a hashtag me too
for dolphins.
For dolphins.
Yeah. Ask a porpoise about it.
Oh.
Man, have you seen that footage on YouTube?
No.
It's these dolphins and they're just like tossing a porpoise body back and forth to each other. They're like playing as if it was a toy.
Oh.
And I'm just like, damn, Simpsons was right. You saw that Simpsons episode where the dolphins like took over humanity and humanity was forced to live at sea. And they were just like, oh, my God, what's going to happen?
I'd be a mermaid.
It'd be a cute one, though.
It would be a real cute one.
I know. I'd have some pretty good boobs.
Would you go topless or would you do the clam bra?
I do like support.
Yeah.
But my boobs are looking pretty good. So probably go bare. Like that feel of the water against them.
You'd make a beautiful little Hanukkah mermaid.
A blue tail.
Meg, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thanks.
And I want to remind folks, we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus, because your contribution to this show is what makes this show happen. And if you become a Plus member, you can access 14, next year we'll be on our 14th season. So right now, 13 years of podcasting. And you know, when we go on our little winter break, you're going to be hungry for some podcasts, so you might as well sign up and download a bunch of them.
If you want to give Feast of Fun as a present to somebody, just write to us, mail@feastoffun.com. And if you want to come on the show, justify your reason to the audience. Let us know how we can best help you. Tell your story. Tell us about the journey of your artwork. But you have to be making art. You have to be making something in order to come on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Send us an email, mail@feastoffun.com. Write your talking points, your intro, your biography. We would love to talk to you. We welcome everybody.
Mm-hmm. Meg, just have a good story.
Have a good story. Yeah. Meg, it's so good to talk to you.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for all the hard work you put into Cooking with Dragons.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, my pay is being able to tell people that I've driven around famous drag queens.
Who are some of the famous drag queens you have picked up
and brought
to this place?
Let me just drop this name. Before they were famous.
But some were already famous.
Some was all famous. I picked up Lady Bunny from the Westin, and we talked about sleep apnea and Kelly Clarkson. And don't die on your chair. Thank you. I've picked up Katya, Ginger Minj, Bob the Drag Queen.
Because we give them VIP. You pick them up in your town
car. Yeah, in my beautiful
Cynthia Lee Fontaine.
Town car.
No, I picked up Cynthia.
No. Oh, okay.
But those are, you know, just a sampling of the ones. It's been really fun, but I like to toss that out and people, like, literally lose their shit. They're like, you, what? What? And I'm like, yeah, I also didn't know who they were at that point. I'm like, honest, I know now. But
well, you pick them up when they're actually in full drag, too.
Yes,
so
I do.
You get to see the magic. Because a lot of these performers, when they're out of costume, you're just like, they look like anybody else.
I see them. Yeah, I see them all dolled up and they can barely get in my car with their hair.
That is a hard thing. How do you guys manage getting them in over here with their big giant hair?
We lean the scene back.
So they're basically like
lounging.
That's not very safe with a seatbelt, though, is it?
I mean, it was really only for Lady Bunny that really, really needed to do it, but...
Yeah, Lady Bunny got into our car, and she was just like, I am so sick of wearing this wig. I'm just going to tear it off. Help me with this. And I'm just, like, pulling her wig off, and she's screeching, ow, ow, don't keep... And I said,
That's not my wig.
And I'm just like, do you want me to stop? No, keep going. And it's just like... I feel like I was ripping her skin off.
Does she have a professional wig puller?
Well, she just bobby, because she has longer hair underneath it, so she has a bobby pinned in, you know?
Everybody asks me, what does Lady Bunny look like out of drag? And I'm like, exactly the way Lady Bunny looks in drag.
Minus
the
mounds of hair.
Just, no, her own hair is big and silver, and but it's still like, I mean, she's one of those people that looks as close to her drag out
self
in drag.
As,
Maybe she looks like the Quaker Oats man.
Basically. Her skin's a little fresher looking than that, though.
But she has, you know, those big juicy cheeks, and, you know, she is high in fiber.
Well, anyway, you can come see Home for Hanukkah with Bubby at the CSC Theater at 929 West Belmont here in Chicago. The dates are 11/29, 12/6, 12/13, and 12/20. The 12/20 show starts at 7 o'clock. All their shows start at 8 o'clock. 12/20 is the last night of Hanukkah, so if you're looking to see
December
20th.
That last candle will be lit.
That last candle will be lit, and we'll
Until next year.
Okay, yeah. Until the candles burn out. But come and see us. It's only $10 for the show. You can find all the information at CSCChicago.com.
CSCChicago.com. Home for Hanukkah with Bubby. Thank you, Meg Grunewald.
Thank you.
Thanks, Meg.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Bubby. Bye.
Bye.